when London was swinging in the mid-1960s, Australian singer Judy Cannon found that she was in the middle of it all.
Keith Moon called me the director of the Grand Order of Lunas because I knew where all the parties were, and I was... Well, I was good for a laugh, wasn't I?
There were big things happening all across town, and Judy saw a lot of it happen. Like the night in late 1966, when she saw Jimi Hendrix for the first time. Now, he'd only recently arrived in the UK, and his legend was just beginning to grow. Judy got an invite to see him at the Bag of Nails.
And there was Jeff Beck, and everybody who was anybody in show business was there. And, you know, I'm in the rock and roll. And blow me down, I met him, he was quiet, he was really nice, and then he went on. And it was funny, can I say it, what everybody was saying, they were all going, shit, shit. It went all around the club, it was quite hysterical just to hear this, because he was like an animal. You know, we'd never seen anything like this on stage. It was just amazing. He was... totally amazing. Get off, very quiet and very nice. He was such a nice bloke, but he didn't eat enough. He'd go to the pub and have a sausage at lunchtime, which I didn't think was a very good idea. And I was about the only girl in London he never tried to get away with. He did once when he was drunk, and I said, I don't know where you've been. So the next day he brought me in roses. She said, I am so sorry. I mean, you're my friend. I said, I'm totally insulted, actually. You could have when you were sober, but you didn't. You've missed your chance now.
This is Rare Collections with David and Geordie Kilby, and our guest for this episode is Judy Cannon. Now, Judy witnessed, and was part of, an amazing transition in the music business from the late 50s into the 1960s and then beyond. She was a singer during the early days of the rock and roll scene in Melbourne. She was a star on early music television shows like Bandstand and 6 O'Clock Rock. And later, she moved to the UK, where she was an in-demand club singer and stage performer. She made records with everyone from Johnny O'Keefe to Jimmy Page and Joe Meek. She's got plenty of great stories to share, so hold on. Here we go.
Well, when I was little, I started off singing on a tram. I got paid for it by a drunk, but I never got any money again. I used to try, but didn't, and I sang in... kindergarten concerts and school balls and everything like that, and then children's radio. And I learnt from Audrey Anderson first, and the Audrey Anderson Girls Choir, and we sang in theatres and like that, Plaza Theatre Northcote, and in the prisons, in the worst blocks. And what else did we? Oh, we did lots and lots of stuff. It was really good grounding, that choir, because you got to sing as well. I can remember at 5, my friend had a friend over from East Melbourne, my friend Sandra, and they were all saying what they were going to do when they were older. And I evidently said, I'm going to be on the stage. It was like when I went to uni high. and the headmaster said, well, you can't be a teacher and do all these shows singing. And I said, oh, well, I'll be on television, that'll do it. So I didn't become a teacher, and I was on television.
So what was your first television show?
Oh, a thing called Stairway to the Stars in Melbourne. I'd got conned into doing it by Bon Gibbons, who ran all the ballroom things, and like I sang at Moomba and all these big ballroom shows and at Coburg Town Hall. And Mabel Nelson, who used to play piano on Swallows Juniors, she was the pianist on the show. So I happened to, he told me, he lied. He said, we're going over to pick up another singer. So off I went with him. And bingo, I was pushed on telly like a little blind-eyed in the headlights deer.
How old were you then?
God, I must have been about 17. But then I got fed up with being called Australia's Doris Day, because I sort of looked like her then. This friend of mine, Bill, he was singing, getting together with a band called the Thunderbirds, and he said, look, Kevin McClellan wants to see you, so he brought him over. And I used to throw in rock and roll numbers like Dim Dim the Lights in the Barn Dance and a few others, and they didn't know they were rock and roll. So that was good. And he saw me and said, well, we're putting together a group, the Thunderbirds. So over I went and I met the boys, and that was it.
The Thunderbirds were one of the first real rock and roll bands working in Melbourne in the late 1950s. As a singer with the band, Judy played dances all over town, places like Glen Iris, the Arcadia, Maison Deluxe, Preston Town Hall, and the biggest gig in town at Earl's Court.
Cole Joy and Keith came down doing shows and came to Earl's Court as well. And they kept saying, you've got to come to Sydney, you've got to come to Sydney. And then Kevin Jacobson got me on Bandstand. And so I would fly up for Bandstand and then do my number, get back, get on the plane, pick up my motor scooter, and off I'd trundle to Earl's Court and do that. That was the biggest dance in Melbourne at the time. It was just huge.
Now, on stage and on TV, Judy was singing everything from jazz to pop and show business tunes during this period, but she always had a real fondness for rhythm and blues records. So to boost her repertoire of new rock and R&B tunes, which were hard to get in Melbourne at the time, she used to go down to the wharves and see the US troops who were getting on and off the ships there. And one that she came across, who was a regular supplier of good records, was a guy called Roscoe, who of course later became an influential soul DJ in the UK.
Never recorded anything like I did on stage, so I was a lot wilder on stage, I think. Yeah. I did some jazz numbers, though, like Smooth Operator, you know, the Sarah Vaughan things,
and yep.
Fever. Mm. Somebody said I was like a thoroughbred when I recorded. The years went back when I didn't like it at all. It wasn't the same as having an audience. Now, if they'd had an audience in the studio, I'd have been fine. But I just found it, oh, so nerve-wracking.
Ooh, mama! He's making eyes at me. Oh, mama, he's awful nice to me. Oh, mama, he's almost breaking my heart. I'm beside him. Lordy, lordy, let his conscience guide him, mama.
In 1960, she was part of the first rock and roll tour to travel the length of the east coast of Australia. It was Cole Joy's first big tour. And she was also on the road with Jimmy Little, who just had his first hit with Danny Boy, and the young Colin Cook.
Who I got the job for because they wanted somebody young and cute. So I said, well, Colin plays saxo in our band and he gets up and sings. He'd be all right. And he was. I mean, they loved him, the girls. They really thought he was lovely. So we did this wonderful tour. It was the first time I'd come across racism because my mother always had all different peoples in our house. You know, it was all different creeds, colours and whatever. So I never knew anything about it, so to speak. And we were in a place called Warhope. And Jimmy did the first chord of his music and this bloke started abusing him and there was like deathly hush. And I've never seen Cole angry. If anybody did the angry bit, Kevin did it, but not Cole. Well, if smoke could come out of somebody's ears, they'd have gone out of Cole's ears. But I said, just watch Jimmy, just watch him. And he waited for the guy, and then he broke into that song, "These hands are the hands of a gentleman." Well, he tore the place apart. It was brilliant. What a comeback. And Cole went on after, and he said, the guy who said that to Jimmy liked to meet me backstage. He didn't. But I just couldn't believe he did that because it was so totally out of character with Cole. But we all felt very strongly about Jimmy. I mean, he was just so lovely. How could anybody say anything nasty to him?
Now, encouraged by mates like Jimmy Little and Cole Joy and Johnny O'Keefe, Judy decided to move to Sydney in the early 60s, and she quickly became a regular face on Bandstand and 6 o'clock Rock, which sound like they must have been a lot of fun to work on.
I was doing a song, that Mr. Songwriter thing, at a festival. That's where we used to do the backing tracks and then sing it on the shows, the O'Keefe show, and Johnny was a bit upset this day because Warren Williams' brother Dennis couldn't get the note. And it was his first appearance and he was just so nervous and all he had was a bell note to start. So if you can imagine somebody racked with nerves, and Johnny yelled at him and I turned around and I said, "Oh, John," I said, "gosh, it's his first time, give him a go." And he swore at me, so I shoved him and he went flying. And everybody got such a shock. And the poor guy in the booth dropped the spools. Robert Iredale, no wonder he had a nervous disposition. And they went flying. And then I went into the toilet. I thought, little rat. And then I got this knock on the door. "Miss Cannon, we are now ready to record." It was Jock. And you couldn't stay mad at him for long. God, he was a terror. And he phoned me about, I don't know, 5 or 6 times in the next couple of nights and said, "We're all right, aren't we? We're still friends, aren't we?" I said, "I'll have to think about it." I made him suffer for a couple of nights, I did.
He gets up each morning and he goes downtown, where everyone's his boss and he's lost in an angry land. He's a little rent, and when he's there with me, he can see that he's everything.
In 1963, Judy decided to move to the UK. Now, friends had been telling her for some time that she needed to come over and try her luck there. And when the TV station that she was working for refused to give her a pay rise, she decided it was time to make the move. And it proved to be a great one. Her early shows in the UK were done mostly in the north of the country on the club circuit up there.
That was a great experience, so I wouldn't knock it for the world, and I had some funny times. I asked for a dressing room once, and the bloke looked at me and said, "Dressing room? You used a toilet. If it's good enough for Bob Monkhouse, it's good enough for you." I said, "That's okay. I can dress in the loo." So off I went. Oh, God, it was a funny place. And at West Hartlepool, I had bad backing all week. They were just horrendous. And I got this blind piano player and a deaf drummer. And I thought, oh, God, this is it. Well, I couldn't believe it. I just told the guy on piano what I needed and where the modulations were. And the drummer, when they did the tempo changes on the thing, hit him on the head to the tempo. So... and they were fantastic. They were really, really good. But anyway, there you go.
Her TV success in Australia and the success that she'd had doing the club shows up north helped her when she got back to London. And soon she had a few doors opening. And one was into the recording side of things.
And then I went down and recorded with Joe Meek. I recorded with Hines of the Tornadoes. That was the backing. With a very young Jimmy Page on guitar. So I can say I've sang with Led Zeppelin, can't I? Yay! Oh, dear.
Now, what was Joe Meek like?
I found him lovely, very gay, but you know how they get a bit highly strung now and again. And this is a knowledgeable person who was the queen of hags before anybody in Sydney, because my friends were Peter Rallon and Carlotta, bless her heart. She used to come over to my place and, God, we used to have some shrieks. And he used to tell me what I should wear and what I shouldn't wear, and he used to do my hair as well. That was Richard or Carlotta. Oh, dear, I've lived. I lost a boyfriend, though, came up from Melbourne to see me, and they were all there, and he took one look and I never saw him again. Story of my life.
How did you come to the attention of Joe Meek then? How did you come to make those recordings?
The manager I was with at the time, Brian Lidston, worked for Keith Prowse Music, and he was looking for somebody to record me, and then they thought of Joe, and that's how I went to Joe, to that funny old house.
Yeah, well, he used to record upstairs, didn't he? Is that right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Can you tell us about the house?
It was brown and green. When they did the film, it was nothing like that believe me, brown and green interiors. It was quite ooh. And you're all in the one room to record. And if they put the strings on in another room, and it all sort of came down to one sort of central place. So it was quite good. It's a bit like recording, actually, for when I was with Rex, because only Cold Joy got to record in the toilet because that had echo. Us other ones, we all had to do it in the studio, piled up with musicians around us.
First day I met you, I heard sweet music from out the blue.
Featuring the stories and the music of Judy Cannon, this is Recollections with Geordie and David Kilby. Now, as well as making records, she was soon appearing on successful TV shows like Stars and Garters, which was a variety show set in a fictitious pub.
Oh, that was brilliant, because the band there was Alex Welsh, his wonderful Lenny Hutchins on drums, who was the Ooyah Ooyah in that band in London, the big trad jazz band, and, oh, God, now forgotten Lenny, the brilliant pianist's name, and Jack Fallon, who was the bass player, and he was Canadian. So they used to be my backing, and between the second and third show, we had a big jam session, and you'd get all these fantastic jazz groups coming down before they went up to Ronnie Scott's to play and stuff. And fun groups like the New Temperate Seven and film actors and television people like Bernard Cribbins. Oh, we used to have a ball.
She was also a hit in the nightclubs of London, where she covered everyone from Peggy Lee tunes to the Rolling Stones.
And I was named as one of the top five nightclub acts in London, along with Engelbert Humperdinck, Lovelace Watkins, Dorothy Squires and Shirley Bassey.
Yep, she was good. And you could have caught her all over town, places like the Astor, the Embassy, Gargoyle, the Celebrity or the Twilight.
All the cab drivers used to come down because I used to do a calypso number. And you had to rhyme with the number, and it was if you say, "Stand up to number one, take her home." And then they had to rhyme with it. So I did the first two. And then you'd hear this boom, 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 boom down the stairs. And it was all the cab drivers. They had all made up things. You couldn't get a cab in London at that time. Because they were all shouting out answers. It was hysterical.
And then there was also the Astor.
That was a funny place because you get all the villains in and like the Cray brothers and that. And they'd send you up drinks and I'd give them to the hostesses. And they used to bring their mums and aunties to see me, and all the Bow Street police guys used to come as well. So it was quite an audience, but nobody was allowed to talk while I was on. They used to like me, so that was fun.
I had a dream about you, baby. It's gone.
Another big success occurred for Judy a little while after she'd auditioned for a role in a rock stage show version of Carmen that was being put together by Arthur Lawrence, who, amongst other things, had written West Side Story. Now, unfortunately, that production never happened, but Lawrence remembered her from the audition there, and years later, when he came back to put on his new show, Gypsy, which had been a big show on Broadway with Ethel Merman, and the London cast was going to be led by Angela Lansbury, he remembered her, and he invited her to come along and give an audition.
So I sort of chuffed over and did the audition, and I tripped over a mic and said a rude word. And Arthur said, "Oh, God, she's perfect." I went, "But you haven't heard me sing." And they said, oh, all right then, you better sing. So I sang a belter, and Angela turned around and she said, "You're going to get the lungs to understudy me." And they said, "Definitely." So that's how I got the job. And so I did Electra and Gotta Get a Gimmick, which was funny because I told my mother when I was small and I bought that record with Ethel Merman that when I grew up I wanted to be in that show, and if I couldn't play Rose I wanted to be one of the strippers, but she nearly died. And so I got to play one of the strippers, and then I did the lead when Angie left and Dolores Gray took over. And in the rehearsal, she got ill. So I went on as Rose, and Angie rang me up from Ireland, and I kept saying, God, I don't know how you do this. I've had to take glucose to get through it. And I was about 33, I think, then, yeah, when I did that. So I was a pretty young Rose, but she thought I would be terrific. And
what was Angela Lansbury like?
Ah, she was lovely. We used to go 10-pin bowling, and the only way I could bowl straight was if I had a glass of wine. So Angie and I would sit there with a glass of wine and have a good bowl. She was just great fun, and her son was my voice coach, you know, for the accent to make sure everything was perfect, because Stephen Sondheim and Julie Stein and Arthur liked everything spot on, you know, vocally and speech-wise. So we had a really great laugh. It was just terrific. And she used to cook for him in between the shows and then go on and do the show. And she'd ask me what I thought of how she played that scene, and she tried something different. And I thought, God, she's asking me. I'd have paid for this instead of paying me, and I couldn't believe it. It was wonderful.
And did you give her any advice?
Sorry?
Did you give her any advice?
Oh, I might be dumb, but I'm not stupid. She even said, why don't you go on a Saturday afternoon matinee? I said, no, they've come to see you. I said, I'll go on when you leave. And I did. That was funny.
Well, time for the curtain to fall on this episode of Recollections. If you've enjoyed what you've heard and you want more information about this or any of our recent shows, you can get in touch via our Facebook page. Just search for Vinyl Recollections. Also hit us up there too if you've got a record that you think we should take a look at in a future episode. And please consider writing a review for us on iTunes as well. We'd really love more folks to find out about the show, and just a few words from you could help. We'll be back in a fortnight's time with more. Until then, enjoy your music, and if you're out digging for vinyl, may luck be on your side.
If you want to bump it with a trumpet,
so get yourself a ticket.